Abdel Fattah. I interviewed them in their family home here in Cairo, Egypt, this weekend. And that does it for this show. Special thanks to Sharif Abdelkaddous, Hani Massoud, Dennis Moynihan, and Nermeen Sheikh here in Cairo. And to Mike Burke, Charina Nadura, Robbie Karen, and Julie Crosby in New York. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
When I first came to Brookhaven Town, way, hey, 90.1, there was no good music to be heard around. Way, hey, 90.1. Then one day I turned on the dial. Way, hey, 90.1. There I found music to make me smile. Way, hey, 90.1. I waited for a legal ID. Way, hey, 90.1. The DJ said WUSB. Way, hey, 90.1. They start each day with the rising sun. Way, hey, 90.1. Don't ever finish till after day is done. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you want good music to hear. Way, hey, 90.1. There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you like the sounds, do take a look. Way, hey, 90.1. At WUSB Stony Brook. Hey, hey, hey.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook, operating at 90.1 and 107.3 on your FM dial. In fact, on everyone's FM dial. It's exactly 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Off the Wall. Thank you. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is off the wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yo.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay. Watching the World Cup at all?
No.
The Winter World Cup?
Nope.
You know, I started watching it, and I realized, you know, they're compressing this thing. I don't know if people notice this, but not only is it in the winter, but instead of taking 32 days, it's taking 29 days. That might not seem like much, but what it means is that in a given day, such as today, instead of having three games on, which is an ordeal to get through if you want to see everything, they now have four games on, and it's going to be like that for the next couple of weeks. And, yeah, I just can't do that. I'm sorry. I just can't. And then after I admitted I couldn't do that, I kind of lost enthusiasm in the whole thing. So now I really couldn't care less what's going on, even though there are moments. I'm still taping everything. I'm going to fast forward through it if something interesting happens. Like today, there was a major upset. I'm not going to say more in case somebody's out there like me that watches these things on delay. But there are moments. There are moments where, you know, you want to see. And, of course, the issues with Qatar. How do you say that country? You know, for a two-syllable country of five letters, nobody knows how to pronounce it.
Qatar.
What? Wait, say that again?
Qatar.
You somehow made it three syllables. How did you do that?
It's Qatar.
It sounds like you're choking every time you say it. Can you clear your throat and now try it?
Qatar.
Yeah, I mean...
Qatar. Qatar. Qatar.
Are you asking or telling?
Qatar.
Gesundheit. Wow. Okay, I probably just insulted all their Qataris.
I think they can take it.
Qataris? That sounds like a spacefaring race.
They probably welcome the conversation to clear up and educate everybody on how it actually sounds.
Captain, I have the Qatari ambassador on the communicator. What do they talk on? They're hailing. You know what? Okay, let's get back to the World Cup. Qatar is how I'm choosing to say it. But I've heard people say Qatar. I've heard people say Qatar.
But not Qatar.
This should have been settled. We had 12 years to get this right, and we still don't know. But, okay, so Qatar has, you know, some really big issues as far as human rights. And not to say other countries don't as well. And, of course, it is hypocritical for some Western countries to be pointing these things out. I get that. But the fact remains, they have a lousy record with human rights. And people need to focus on just what it is that's going on over there and not back down. For instance, you know, I don't know if I'm more upset at Qatar or at FIFA, which is the governing body of the international football. They made it pretty much illegal to wear armbands that say One Love on them, which is basically a statement of inclusion.
Wait, I thought that was allowed.
The only thing that's allowed are the FIFA-sanctioned armbands, which have a different phrase. But if they were told a couple of days ago, the teams were told, if any of your players come out with One Love on their arms, you know, it's their arms. They should be able to put whatever they want on them. But if they come out with that statement on their arms, they will be yellow carded immediately. And all the teams back down. What I would have done, I would have had my whole team get yellow carded. I know it's a blemish on the individual player's record. I would have left it up to the players, I guess. But what a statement that would make to have an entire team yellow carded for wearing a statement of inclusion. And I just don't know how FIFA has sunk so low. Is this really about agreements on trademark phrases? Is that what they're upset about? Or they just are really sensitive to anybody raising any human rights issue in a place where human rights aren't exactly priority number one? It's really taken away from the entire game and made the whole thing a bit silly. But that's no reason not to take the pressure off. And I'm hoping people do some things at these games. I hope there's some show of activism and of standing up to authoritarianism, because boy, there are just so many examples of how workers building these massive stadiums. Which, what are they going to do with these massive stadiums after this is over? They've built what, eight of them? You know, the country is the size of Connecticut. How many massive stadiums does Connecticut have? How many major league teams does Connecticut have? I don't know why I'm picking on Connecticut all of a sudden. They can hear us. But you know, I mean, yeah, you got a couple of college football teams, I guess, but that's it. That's it. Yeah. Used to have the New England Whalers, I think. I think they used to play in Hartford. But that wasn't the stadium. Point is, this tiny country has built all this infrastructure with all this money, and who is going to benefit from that? And you have the majority of the population are basically migrant workers. The majority of the population. I think it's something like less than half a million Qataris, people who are actually Qatari citizens, and 4 million if you add in all the foreign workers. So that's, you know, that's kind of bizarre. And of course, questions as to how they got the World Cup in the first place. It's all sorts of evidence of corruption and bribery and all sorts of things like that. It really taint the entire image.
I think it hurts the sport. It hurts the athletes. It hurts all the up and comers, the true fans and or regions that drive ticket sales and keep clubs going and provide talent for Olympic and other competitions that have their own difficulties. But it really has spun out.
Mm-hmm.
Like FIFA is a wild organization as it stands now, and to hear the rationalizing and leader after leader of that organization succumbing to some sort of scandal or corruption, controversy, you name it, it seems to be a magnet for it. And it's only, I think, to the detraction of the fairness and the sport itself. Some of these initiatives for human rights, for equality, and ending racism, they are all aligning themselves with this organization under the assumption that it is out there to do good. And it's just not clear in their actions in these last couple of World Cups to me that they really have a deep commitment to that. It seems like it's convenient for them to brand themselves and cast this organization as a true leader for a lot of those initiatives. But the kinds of entities they're aligning themselves with in awarding these things, the sheer volume of money and corruption that leads up to it, to put on these large events, it smacks of a lot of the other sporting institutions that have been tainted by this kind of thing. I'm thinking of cycling, mm-hmm. the incredible scandals there. I'm thinking of horse racing, even, you know, that all of these kinds of things that have large gambling or you know, now sports gambling is really everywhere, but large amounts of endorsements and money flowing through them, it just makes it so much easier for people to get wrapped up in what is not the actual event and the game and the fairness of it.
I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's almost as if when you inject large amounts of money into it, it somehow becomes corrupt.
Well,
does that make sense? Is that no? Well,
no,
it's a theory.
It plagues these kinds of things, and of course, you know, everyone will stand up to defend and say, well, it takes this, it takes that, it takes the other thing. But what truly is the point? Because these events from the position of FIFA are about creating understanding and bringing soccer and peace and all these things through this these business and other kinds of relationships to build stadiums or put on events. But that's not how the people that are putting on the host countries are using it. They can use the opportunity with just a huge flows of cash to buy a place in the world stage, a branding, getting cover from an increasingly corrupt and dirty organization in FIFA. And so, I mean, I just don't think they're, you know, the more events they put on, I don't think they're getting more, their reputation is getting better. I think it just seems to be, as I said, spun out. Like, just, I mean, what is the point, truly, other than these huge construction projects that really are they really improving circumstances in various countries? Are they really changing or at least opening a dialogue about some of the equality or other initiatives of FIFA that they say they're about? I mean, they say a lot, but how do they act? And how is that tearing down this this sort of, as we like to think of it, a rather innocent game? It just is silly, and it's really, it's hard to take seriously. I find after so fresh after the pandemic, when there were no sports, that really occupying myself with this kind of entertainment and telling myself this is a healthy distraction because, oh, you know, reality is too tough. I can't get with that anymore. I really can't. Sports are neat. If you're an athlete, they're probably even more important to you. But for a lot of people right now, I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's as altruistic as we've been projecting onto it, at least for me. I'm not getting as much out of it, especially with a shadow like this cast over it.
Well, I mean,
how can you support that?
No, there are a lot of shadows being cast. I mean, we had the same conversation 8 years ago when the World Cup was in Brazil. The difference being, Brazil is a real soccer country.
You could sort of, Russia?
Not so much, but
we had
definite conversations about human rights records. So this is going to happen no matter where you go. You know, Qatar is unique. It's tiny. It's not really known in the soccer world, the football world. There just seems to be a lot more evidence of some kind of collusion that made it land there in the first place. So many other places at the World Cup probably would have been better received and done at its normal time in the summer rather than in the winter. That alone is kind of weird, you know, open to experimentation and trying different things. But, you know, that combined with all the authoritarianism, it just makes it kind of, tainted in many ways. But that said, there are still a lot of people interested. It's still fascinating to watch. There are, of course, still the players and the game itself and the surprises. And hopefully individualism will triumph in the end. That's why I'm hoping people aren't intimidated by the authoritarianism of both Qatar and FIFA, which unfortunately they seem to be hand in hand. Now, you might not know this, and it's because, you know, soccer, as it's called in this country, still hasn't reached the heights that other mass media pro sports have, and that's a shame because I think there's just so much to enjoy in the sport and so much unity that you can have with the rest of the world. But one of the players on the American World Team World Cup team comes from right here, Lake Grove. You know, right where Smith Haven Mall is, that area there. He didn't take the field for the team's draw yesterday with Wales. His name is Joe Scally. He's had plenty of support from friends, family, and neighbors who hosted watch parties at the 19-year-old's childhood home and at Lake Grove's Village Idiot Pub, which his parents own. How about that? that's a local connection right there. The Long Island soccer star with a golden smile made the 26-man roster as one of the team's youngest members. He rose from peewee and club soccer in Lake Grove to Major League Soccer as a 15-year-old player for the New York Football Club. Others took notice of Scally's skills, and at 18, he was playing for a team in the Bundesliga, which is Germany's top professional soccer league. "We've been watching soccer my whole life, so this is a dream come true for our whole family," his brother Drew Scally said. "It's all really cool, so he's just taking it all in. This has been his dream ever since he started playing soccer. Just making the team means a lot to him and to all of us." And when you consider, this is bigger than the World Series. This is bigger than the Super Bowl. And you know, people aren't talking about it quite as much.
It only compares, like, Olympics, I think, would be the only thing that could come close, but it's an entirely different event. Mm-hmm. I mean, but in that global reach, like you're saying, it's distinct.
Absolutely. And I'm rooting for the American team, too, you know? It's only because...
There's a couple of players from Seattle?
Yeah, they're a young team. They're untested. I think only one player on the team has been to a World Cup before. What turns me off are all the militaristic chanting of USA. You know, every other team has a song. You know, you hear songs, long songs too, in the stands for these other teams. With the USA, it's just USA, USA. It turns me off so much. If they didn't do that, it would be perfect, I think. You know, I don't think the team really is into it that much either.
Chanting an acronym, it doesn't capture the spirit. There needs to be a real effort, I think, to come up with something that really people can own and really sing and chant proudly without, I don't know, that staccato hypnotic acronym that is used in so many different
spheres. It's militaristic. I think it's militaristic.
Yeah. But it is used all the time and in really, I think, kind of silly ways. It takes on less meaning, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a certain mentality. You won't find that being chanted at a pride parade, for instance. You know, I'm very doubtful that would ever happen. There's a reason for that. Because this is, you know, your conformist macho society type of chant. And I just think we've grown beyond that. At least I hope we have.
It has a touch of sort of imperial colonial aims. Yeah. Same with the anthem. You know, we got to work on this.
Got to work on the anthem. I mean, I'm sick of the Star Spangled Banner because it's just not a very good song. And there are better songs. America the Beautiful. What's wrong with that? You know, even My Country 'Tis of Thee, except you might get into some issues with the British because it's the same as God Save the Queen. I don't know how that happened exactly.
What about Yankee Doodle, that's a good one.
All right, let's just stop right there. No, okay. No. But there are better songs. This Land Is Your Land. You know, Pete Seeger.
This Land Is My Land.
You see, we could have a back and forth about that. Yeah. But Star Spangled Banner, I don't know. It's just, again, it's very militaristic. Bombs bursting in air and things like that. It's just, we can do better. We are better. And on that subject, let's talk about election results a little bit more. Because it's now, what, 2 weeks out? And results are pretty much in. And, you know, like we said, we'll take it. You know, it's okay. Could have been better, but it certainly could have been worse.
There was plenty of encouragement for it, and people were, you know, getting out the message and making all of the distinction or kinds of pros and cons and weighing platform issues, and you know, it was a very vibrant campaign period.
You know, I like to say, and I believe it's true, that I tried my best to reach out to everybody I knew and get them to vote. Didn't tell them who to vote for. I just told them, you have to vote. It's important. Your voice matters. And most of the responses I got were, well, we're safe. New York's a blue state. Kathy Hochul's going to win. We're going to be okay. And, you know, reassuring as that sounded, it was wrong. It was wrong. Let me tell you a couple of things that happened. Democratic turnout on Long Island. We're talking specifically about Long Island now. In these elections, Democratic turnout declined by 7.8%. Republican turnout rose 5.7%. That's compared with 2018. And that shift helped Republican candidates overcome the Democratic significant advantage in voter enrollment. Yeah, there were a lot more Democrats registered. Who knew? Well, I knew. I think we all should know this. But when more of them turn out, they win, even though there's less of them. Democratic turnout in Nassau County was 51.25%, 57.8% in 2018. Whereas turnout for Nassau Republicans jumped from 57.6% to 64.6% this year. And in Suffolk, turnout among Democrats dropped from 60.6% in 2018 to 51.4% on November 8th. And turnout amongst Suffolk Republicans went from 62% to 66.3% this year. Result, Long Island is all red now, as far as representation in Congress. Not the Senate. I'm talking about the House. We had such good candidates. We had a lot of potential here. And, you know, you can blame the Democratic Party, the state Democratic Party, for not doing enough. It's unclear to me how much of that is their job. You know, the gubernatorial race, I don't think it's their job to push congressional campaigns all throughout the state. I think that's the job of counties, you know, the county Democrats and Republicans and people like that. I can't say for sure, but clearly not enough was done on whoever's responsibility that falls onto. But in the end, it's us. It's the people. We didn't turn out in sufficient numbers. If you stayed home because you assumed New York was going to go for Hochul and all the other races would be fine, this is on you. I don't want to blame any one or two people because a lot of people did the same thing. But this attitude, this is what caused this to happen. And, you know, it's not just missing out an opportunity to hold on to the House, because this is what it comes down to. Had you guys turned out, had you guys, you know, been responsible for Democrats being elected instead of Republicans to the House of Representatives, the Democrats would have held on to the House. The Democrats would have, here, Long Island, New York State, it's on us. We made this happen because we didn't turn out in sufficient numbers. You can blame whoever you want, but that's what it comes down to in the end.
You can't vote as though your precinct isn't vital. It's just, no matter what it is, you have to participate as though your precinct is vital in every way, up and down the ballot, no matter what election. You can't act any other way. And then tell other people to vote. Don't tell them how, but tell them to. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make a sign, you know, install a couple, follow the coverage, help out at a polling place, but you gotta participate. It's the only way it works. So complacency, apathy, disbelief or mm-hmm. a sort of disenfranchisement with the political process and the system that we have, thinking it doesn't work or it won't work for you. Well, what are you doing to make it work? And when you have grievances and so forth, your recourse is to vote. The only other thing you can do is try to have a conversation with the people that get voted in, whether you voted for them or not.
Yes.
And
sure.
And that's what you have left, is when they aren't the people you voted for, you get to call them and you get to tell them, hey, I'm a constituent. I didn't necessarily vote for you, but these are my needs.
Yeah.
This is what's going on in our community and you need to address it because I'm part of the people that you're responsible for,
whether
that you represent.
Whether they admit it or not, they are representing you. And that is something that you have to hold them to. And
if they don't listen, you get to vote them out.
You get to vote them out, but you also get to continue challenging them and letting people know, you know, that they're not listening to you. That's important. But really, you know, I just hope we learn this lesson this time, because I saw it coming. You know, I was tweeting about this. I didn't get a single retweet alike, but I was saying there aren't enough Democratic signs on Long Island. And all of this lying that Lee Zeldin was doing about skyrocketing crime and people being let out without bail and reoffending and just basically putting the fear of the Lord into people when there was no evidence to support it in the first place, that kind of thing led to a larger turnout. He knew exactly what he was doing. And him losing the race, that doesn't mean he lost, because he's a rising star in the Republican Party now, even though he's an election denier. You know, so he got what he wanted out of this, and he's being widely heralded as the person responsible for turning Long Island completely red now. But, you know, in addition to the issues in Congress that we now bear some responsibility for, there are also very local races that were affected by this. And the one that tears me apart the most is our state assemblyman, Steve Englebright. This guy has been in politics for 39 years, 36 years. He was a county legislator, then a state assemblyman, you know, for decades. And he's somebody who never got into a us versus them type of argument. You never felt that he was only representing Democrats and not Republicans. This is a guy who took care of the community, who saved more acres of land than I can possibly count. He was a victim of this. It made absolutely no sense. This guy was doing his job, doing a great job, and he gets voted out because of this red wave on Long Island. I want to read a letter that was in this week's Village Times Herald, which is a terrific weekly paper that comes out every week and prints letters, because this is one of the few places where people discuss these things. And the letter is entitled, "Thank You for Your Service, Steve Englebright. I was saddened to learn that our state assemblyman, Steve Englebright, narrowly lost his re-election Tuesday, November 8th. The official results have not been released, but it appears that there are not enough outstanding votes to change the outcome. Losing Steve as our state representative will be a big loss to our area, as well as Long Island and New York State. Over his 3 decades in Albany, Steve has been the key sponsor of so much environmental legislation that most of us probably take it for granted. In addition to being the key driver for this year's successful $4 billion environmental bond, which will help New York fight climate change, protect acres of open space, and keep our lakes, harbors, and streams pollution-free, he was also the father of net metering that expanded solar power in all our neighborhoods and forced energy utilities to pay homeowners and commercial building owners for the excess energy that they produce. When you look around the Three Village community and see all of the historic buildings that have been protected over the years and the focus on our early colonial history, you can thank Steve Englebright for his foresight and ability to bring back dollars from Albany to protect these historic treasures. And of course, we all owe Steve a debt of gratitude for his early efforts as an up-and-coming environmentalist and county legislator to convince policymakers that the Suffolk County Pine Barrens, located in the eastern part of the county, needed to be protected from development in order to conserve our critical underground water supply. Hopefully, Steve will decide to stay involved with all of his many activities to help improve the quality of life of our area and the state of New York. Thank you, Steve, for your service." That letter written by George Hoffman of Setauket. Couldn't have said it better. And it brings back memories. One of the first times that I hung out with Steve, a good friend of mine from many years ago, he was showing a bunch of people out east in the Pine Barrens what he called the flight of the buck moth, this rare insect that takes flight every October. It's just a mating ritual, but it's unique to the Pine Barrens and essential that the Pine Barrens be preserved, which they are, thanks to Steve. And again, so many other triumphs in that particular field.
A true unsung hero of the area, and it is a really beautiful to have the recognition there organized and written up in such a succinct way, because people really don't think about this stuff until it's gone, until there's some crises. But being proactive and thinking about the larger context, whether be it environmental or historical, it really matters in the long run in the identity of an area and the character of it.
Yeah. You know, in all these years, I was just so proud that Steve was our representative. And it angers me that the only reason he lost by a few hundred votes, but the only reason he lost was because people were just voting red all the way. And the only reason they were voting red all the way was because of the lies that Lee Zeldin told. And the only reason that Democrats weren't able to outnumber those Republicans was because they didn't turn up. They didn't show up. This is the price we pay. Yeah, Kathy Hochul won. Great. I'm happy about that. We kept the Senate. Great. All right. But we didn't keep the House. We lost the House. And that's because of Long Island. That's because of New York. And that's a damn shame. There's another piece here too, actually, the same page on the Village Times Herald, which I suggest people support this paper, because it's been coming out for decades, and it's just great to have an actual newspaper that represents communities, and this certainly represents the community. These are reflections on the midterm elections by Shoshana Herskowitz, who is the founder of Suffolk Progressives. As I reflect on the recent midterm elections, I am both breathing a sigh of relief and also shaking my head in disbelief. That's exactly what we're doing tonight. Wow, I guess everyone's doing that. While Democrats had a far more successful night nationally than expected, on Long Island and across New York State, fear, dishonesty, and racism prevailed. We have much work to do. I am relieved that Governor Kathy Hochul defeated Congressman Lee Zeldin. Zeldin's positions on issues including fracking, reproductive rights, and gun safety would be harmful to this state. His vote to overturn the 2020 presidential election, hours after the violent insurrection at the Capitol, marks him as someone who does not respect free and fair elections. With that said, I am devastated to see that a great public servant like State Assemblyman Steve Englebright has lost his seat. Englebright has been a champion for climate protection and public education in his decades in office. His opponent, Republican Ed Flood of Port Jefferson, ran a campaign that was deeply racist in tone, sending out a mailer with incarcerated black men pictured. Flood also had troubling things to say about public education. In a Meet the Candidates night in October, Flood said that out here, public education isn't a problem, but in lower socioeconomic areas where parents aren't involved, it is. He seems to misunderstand that the purpose of public education is to provide every child with a high-quality public education, no matter their zip code. I wonder how he will be able to face the historically black community of Gordon Heights as their representative in Albany. He's already made it quite clear how he views people of color. The loss of state and congressional seats in New York, coupled with the narrow win of Hochul, ought to give the Democratic Party pause. The Hochul campaign seemed to cede Long Island to Zeldin and barely engage the base out here. I agree with that 100%. That's what I was noticing throughout. No, we talked about it on this show. There were no Hochul signs up. There were no Hochul. There was maybe one, and it got torn down immediately. You know, there's a problem when that happens, and it wasn't countered. There wasn't enough forceful pushback.
This is an area that definitely ought to have been saturated with that kind of stuff, just to counter the real ill will towards her,
yeah,
her entire campaign.
Continuing, this cost us Democratic seats down ballot at the congressional and state levels. Jay Jacobs serves as chair of both the New York State and Nassau County Democratic Committees, and Rich Schaefer serves as the Suffolk County Democratic Committee chair. Under their leadership, Long Island has bled seats for several election cycles at the local, state, and federal levels. Democrats deserve better leadership. In any failing organization, the leaders must be held accountable. It is past time for new local leadership in the Democratic Party. And that's what I was referring to, saying this is a county issue. The leaders in those counties really failed the people, I think. I mean, the people failed as well, but you have to also look to the leadership of the parties. If the numbers don't match what they really should match, you know, because we're talking about more Democrats than Republicans. Why aren't they showing up? Why aren't they being engaged? Why aren't they even putting up signs? You know, things like that. Continuing, when I think about what should come next for the Democratic Party, I believe it's a long overdue moment of self-reflection. Women are vulnerable with their reproductive rights under attack. Communities of color are over-policed and disproportionately incarcerated. Young people struggle to live in the place they are raised. The income inequality and segregation on Long Island is staggering. Despite this, too many Democrats aim to work with the other side. As a prime Democratic voter, I am not seeking a kumbaya moment with insurrectionists and their sympathizers. I want my daughter's reproductive rights to be protected. I want my children to not live in a world of school shootings and lockdown drills. I want affordable housing for the next generation. I want to protect our climate. It is time for Democrats to affirm our values and stop cowering and pandering. That is how Democrats on Long Island can stop themselves from becoming a minority party. Despite my disappointment, I remain hopeful. When I speak with young people, I see their passion for environmental, social, economic, and racial justice. Gen Z members came out to vote in historic numbers this year and were key to democratic success across the country. Our youth are the future, and they are grounded in hope and action, not bigotry and fear. And for that reason, I will continue to fight the good fight alongside and in solidarity with my children's generation who deserve to inherit a better world. And that amazing editorial piece from Shoshana Herskowitz, who is the founder of Suffolk Progressives. It appeared in this week's Village Herald Times, Village Times Herald, in the Three Village, Stony Brook, Setauket area. I don't disagree with any of that. I really don't. And it's something that we need to have a dialogue amongst ourselves.
Redouble efforts completely. Don't shy away from correcting some of where people fell short, and spreading out and not having tunnel vision around some of our efforts, really seeing where there is need, because I can see myself in some of those remarks, some of my experiences, and so many people do. So many people have been at the effect of some of these policies, and they need help. They need leadership, real leadership, and that can be transformational. It can be change. It can involve change and so forth. But it is certainly not a time to let up and to be fully self-congratulatory.
Yeah, and on the subject of the loss of Steve Englebright's seat, the winner, Edward Flood, Port Jefferson, Republican, I don't think it's been announced officially yet, but he's holding on to a 700 vote lead over Englebright, but apparently there aren't enough votes to overcome that. So, those of us who believe in elections know the writing on the wall. It's not what we want, but it's what is. But I wanted to also focus some attention on his reaction, because it's a bit surprising and interesting, actually. In a phone interview on Friday afternoon, Flood said he learned of his victory shortly after noon that day. While this result stunned many within the community, he said it was no surprise to his team. On election day, we expected to win, and we expected to win narrowly, he said. Throughout the campaign, Flood focused on the issues of crime and the economy. While the Assemblyman-elect attributes his win in part to declining trust in Albany, he credited those involved in his campaign. I think it was a combination of the general attitudes towards politics right now, what's going on both statewide and nationwide, the issues that we were hitting on, and then our ground game. We had a lot of volunteers. Once we did some polling and realized our message was resonating, it just needed to get out. And that is how you win races. But this is the interesting part. Despite his differences from his predecessor, Flood remarked on the qualities he admired in Englebright. Assemblyman Englebright, at the end of the day, is a gentleman, Flood said. He was in this position for 30 years, a county legislator for 9. For someone to go through 39 years and never have an ethical thing come up, never have a scandal, it goes to the quality of the human being. He added, Englebright has been a champion of the environment, and that's something I want to continue. All right, well, you know what, Edward Flood?
It'll be interesting to see what he does.
We're going to hold you to that. We're going to give you a chance. You won fair and square. No question about that. And these words matter. These words mean something, you know, because a lot of people don't know how to say that. So I know there are people telling me that I'm being naive and I should just, you know, condemn from the start, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to, you know, give the new people a chance. Maybe they'll listen. Maybe they'll listen to what we as a community have been saying for decades, what we value, what we need, what we want. And let's work on the differences. But let's strengthen what Steve has accomplished and not let any of that go to waste. And I really hope that we have not seen the last of Steve Englebright, because he truly is a leader that every community deserves.
Yeah. They don't make them like that anymore, do they?
I don't think they do. They should. I don't think they do.
Incredible. I'm glad we spoke about this. It was I'm sure some other people have some thoughts on it. Please write us OTW at 2600.com if you're thinking of a particular race in your area, or this one in particular, or just some of the lesser known positions that have a real impact on environment and the nature of your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to hear about that. It's crucial and can get lost, I think, in some of the big reactions and takeaways.
No, absolutely. You're calling out for emails, otw@2600.com, made me think that people should also call, but they can't call right now because we're not actually in the physical studio. I understand that will be possible, though, in the future, even if we're not there. We'll talk about that more. But that also led me to realize that we have not been giving out the phone number for pledging, because we are in the middle of Radiothon here at WUSB.
You got to say it.
I'm going to say it.
No, don't forget.
Give me a chance to say it.
All right, well, out with it.
I don't appreciate your tone.
Please.
631-632-WUS... Oh, wait a minute. That's not the right number. I'm sorry. That's the call-in number. Don't call that because you won't get on the air. 631-632-6901. That's the number. That can be picked up by people. 631-632-6901. And if by chance there are not people there, we can't really tell because we can't see it. WUSB.FM is our website, and there is a big link there for pledging. You can pledge securely online. It's pretty amazing. And we really, really could use support at this time. Our signal has been pretty much decimated since early in the year because, well, our transmitter was more than twice as old as it should be before it got retired, and it gave up the ghost. The good news, the really, really good news, is that we have secured a brand new transmitter, one that will be showing up in January, is what the latest update I've heard. And that is something that actually goes against the odds for us, because we were in a dire state for quite a period of time. And when that transmitter gets here and is plugged in and aligned and all that, our signal will dramatically increase and improve, and be in no small part to our listener donations. That's why they're so crucial. So please be one of those listeners. And there's all kinds of cool things you can get in exchange. You'll see at WUSB.FM on the donate link, you'll see some of those. Or the person at 631-632-6901 can answer whatever questions you have. The important thing is, please spread the word, because it's kind of hard for us right now with a significantly reduced signal to reach out to people. So we are relying on word of mouth, and hopefully people will help us out with that.
Yeah, it doesn't take much, and we're really at a transitional stage with some technical features. We're paying attention, of course. I know there are a lot of listeners that are want to get a better signal. They're missing us out there in FM land. We're working on it. We have taken notice. We understand the operating environment, and there are long overdue improvements that your donations will help at least with the daily operations and the important logistical things, so that we can work on these big projects. Of course, any other budgetary constraints, operational costs, that's all going on as we speak behind the scenes. Many people working on it. That's aside from the creativity, the community effort here in a free form college station at the lower end of the dial.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to know that we're working very hard technically and creatively, but specifically with the engineering feats ahead of us. We are moving ahead, and it is going to keep us tuned up and, amplified on into the future. And we'll be building out the rest of a lot of our new facilities, a lot of our projects. They're really counting on us filling out that space,
mm-hmm.
and being something to reckon with for... let's say, some of our neighbors on the dial.
Well, I mean, look at it this way. We have, in the last few years, moved into a brand new facility, built a brand new facility. Our chief engineer, Frank Burgert, has done so much in that field. It's stunning.
With an incredible team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Volunteers, producers.
We've moved into a brand new facility. We've gotten a brand new frequency at 107.3. Now we're getting a new transmitter. And we are about to also embark on improving the 107.3 frequency because it's being stepped on by a station up north, which we won't mention right now, but we intend to get back our listeners on that frequency. So 2023, I think, is going to be a very good year for us.
Certainly. And none of this stuff moves fast, but we do not forget about it.
Mm-mm.
We come back, we make good on all of this, and it is apparent to us, and we want you, the listeners, to have confidence that this is an exciting time for us. It's pivotal. Your support to WUSB, simply going to WUSB.fm. If you listen online, you're probably already there. It's probably in your browser. You got a tab open.
Mm-hmm.
Hit that donate button. Participate in this community effort. I guarantee you, we'll have updates. We're going to have exciting times ahead. And all of this stuff is, it is in some ways delayed. It has taken twists and turns as we navigated archiving every single compact disc we had in the old radio station.
Forgot about that.
We're still imagining what our vinyl library will be. I mean, we've only scratched the surface here. We want you to join us for the rest of this trip on 90.1 and 107.3. W297BM, those
right. Yes.
Wonderful frequencies will continue to be our home and stronger than ever with your support.
And again, 631-632-6901 or WUSB.FM to pledge. Please do so. And mention that Off the Wall is one of your favorite shows, if it's okay, if that's true. Hey, yesterday, the first 7 pot shop licenses were issued for Long Island. That's kind of big news. State regulators issued licenses to 7 applicants to open Long Island's first recreational marijuana shops. The businesses will be allowed to start delivering their products to customers within weeks while they work to set up their storefronts. The Cannabis Control Board was meeting in Harlem. They approved 36 licenses statewide under New York's conditional license program, which is designed to prioritize New Yorkers directly impacted by the inequitable enforcement of old marijuana laws. For instance, Black New Yorkers were 15 times more likely, and Latino residents were 8 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana than white people over the past 30 years. And of course, research shows all these groups use marijuana at similar rates. Now, at least 3 of the licenses have operated businesses on the island. Albert Caprero owned the glass business in Commack. Growth Industries New York, LLC, launched by former Center Reach smoke shop owner Daniel Connolly, and GI New York, LLC. And Hydrophonics, started by Brian Whalen and John Alvarez, who ran a home construction and remodeling business in Suffolk County. That's according to state regulators. Others opening on the island, Brian Stark Enterprises, LLC, Strain Stars, LLC. You know what? They're all LLCs. I'm not going to say that anymore.
Well, of course.
Route 13 and Keep It 100, all led by people who have run businesses in Brooklyn or Queens. Now, specific locations of the shops have not yet been determined. So we can expect that information in the weeks and months ahead. Basically, at least one recreational marijuana shop will open somewhere in the state by the end of the year, and hopefully more than that. But this is progress. It's good news as far as I can see.
So you need like 4 people to go in on a half pound?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly
like
how that
3
works.
3 ounces per person. So yeah, save up your, pool your money.
Yeah.
I think you need like, 3 or 4 people. Probably 4 just to be safe. 3 ounces each. That's 9. That's more than a half. Yeah, you're good.
Meanwhile, medical marijuana companies would have to pay more than $5 million to enter the recreational market and wait 3 years to sell directly to consumers under rules that are proposed by state regulators. They released those regulations yesterday in the same meeting where they approved the state's first licenses. Now, these rules are designed to keep large multi-state medical cannabis companies from crowding out local entrepreneurs. So that seems like a good thing. Seems like a good idea.
Yeah, and I think some of the way this has been done, I know Little Beach Harvest at Shinnecock has had a lot to say about this. There's not enough support for some of these entrepreneurs. They may have secured a license and so forth, but it is still a new market. It is one that there is a lot of competition. There's a lot of gray and black market activity that these candidates are up against. But they're forging ahead. So I strongly encourage people to, you know, support some of the licensed businesses and just realize how much they're up against getting their name out there, establishing themselves, being able to employ folks and get their operations underway. This is a tall order. It's no small task. Please, please, please be understanding. And with the New York State Board, I mean, they should do everything they can, especially for people that were early applicants and deserving of the help that they're getting.
And the last bit of progress that we have to touch upon, of course, is Artemis, the trip to the moon.
The goddess.
Yeah.
Flying around the moon.
You know what's cool? For those who don't know, Artemis is the new space program that NASA has launched. Artemis 1 right now is circling the moon. It arrived, I think, yesterday. Gave some fairly close-up pictures. Low res for now, high res when it gets back. And we'll be heading back towards Earth pretty soon and splashing down in the Pacific Ocean. What's cool is Artemis is the twin sister of Apollo. A lot of people don't know this. Apollo, of course, being the first space program to the moon. And now the twin sister. It's her turn. So I think that's kind of cool. And they pledged to send a woman up on the first mission to the moon in 2 years, 3 years?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a huge, huge contingent of the core engineering teams and down to mission control led by a female controller there. So it just is quite inspiring, totally different from perspective, because we're riding along with this thing from more than a dozen vantages, getting near real-time streams. However,
the technology has improved so much. We'll be able to see so much more.
We have so many more tools. The compactness, the way things are packaged, how much more we can do with the space and materials. It's just thrilling because it's very retro. A lot of the same old stuff, but a lot of new attributes to it, and it's made it a thrill to tag along.
And this time, you get the feeling they're there to stay when they arrive. Now, Artemis 1, nobody's in it. They're just checking out the route, making sure nothing's in the way, and coming back. Artemis 2 will be, I believe, 2024. Artemis 2 is going up with a crew, doing the exact same thing that Artemis 1 did. And then Artemis 3, the year after that, 2025, will actually land on the moon. That is going to be incredible.
I really like it too, because they're reusing the rocket engines from the shuttle program, and it's awesome to see the way they're using materials.
And of course, we have to go out with the Lothar and the Hand People song. Of course, we're going to leave out all the hypnotism stuff because we don't want people falling asleep for Finn. So we will see you next week. Again, write to us, otw@2600.com, and please pledge wusb.fm. We'll see you next week.
Have fun.
Standing on the moon, filled with thoughts of home. Earth so slowly turning, 20,000 years. You riders together on a starship of stone, living together, trying together, dying alone. Standing on the moon, filled thoughts of home. Earth so slowly turning. 20,000 years. Human hopes and fears. Together on a starship of stone, living together, flying together, dying alone. La 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 la.
Yeah, Lothar and the Hand People, where else but on WUSB Stony Brook.